At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back, guys, to episode 48 now, Jamie, I think we're on, of Knowing Wheel. Is it 48?
I think it's 48, yeah.
48 episodes in. We've basically now, well, I mean, we've been doing this for over a year, but we've almost got a year's worth of episodes if you were to watch this or listen to this once a week. But yeah, as you would have already heard, though, we're joined, as always, by Mr. 183. How are we doing, mate?
I'm doing well. Good race at the weekend, so all's good in my world.
Yes, yeah. Lovely weather as well over the last week here in the UK. Doesn't happen often. Have you been up to anything exciting?
I mean, I went outside a few times in Manchester. That's about
so you got stabbed then?
Not quite. I avoided it all this time.
This time?
Well, I've been mugged once before, but we'll not get into that.
No, we won't get into that today. But, of course, yeah, Formula One, though, went back to Jeddah this weekend at the Jeddah Corniche Circuit, of course, a track that sparked a little bit of controversy last year, and I think safe to say that has happened again. But, of course, before we even got into the weekend, though, Jamie, it was confirmed Sebastian Vettel doesn't want to race the Aston Martin this year, still has COVID, bless him.
Yeah, he keeps drawing on his little red lines on the COVID test to avoid driving the Aston Martin, which I think is probably fair enough.
I wouldn't blame him.
No, I'm sure he'll be back for Australia if he fancies driving it then. But yeah, that gave Hulk another go. I wasn't expecting very much as a Hulk fan since he's never driven this circuit before.
And he delivered up to your expectation.
Well, he beat Stroll in the race.
Stroll decided to delete himself. Well, I mean, we'll talk about that later on because that is a talking point.
But yeah, Hulk
for
was
the
back.
Video.
Probably his last ever race in F1.
Yeah, and he did super well.
Well, he top 12.
Out of how many people that crossed the line?
12.
Yeah, there you go.
That's decent.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, Hulk back in the car though once again. I did read an interesting thing online though, Jamie, saying, you know, there could possibly genuinely be, you know, Sebastian Vettel had COVID, obviously back at home with his family. This might well have decided for him whether he is either A, going to return next year, or B, return at all, because Seb's always been a bit of a family man, hasn't he?
Mm.
Definitely doesn't need the money. It would not surprise me if he turned around this week and went, actually, you know what? Yeah, Abu Dhabi last year was my last race.
I don't see that happening.
I don't see it likely. But
I can see why people are saying that, because why would he come back and just race around in the ninth fastest car? Like,
it's only quicker than the Merc, is it?
Wow, here's the Hamilton fan speaking about how quick the Mercedes is. Shock. But no. It's probably quicker than Williams, but that's literally it.
Yeah. No, I would say ninth fastest is actually where I'd rank it, you know, all sort of memes aside. practice, though, unfortunately, Jamie, it's safe to say didn't really get off in the best light, did it? I think it's something needs to be discussed, unfortunately, today.
Yeah. I don't actually know all my facts on this, so if you want to lead, then go ahead.
So, from what we've gathered, the Aramco facility, of course, massive sponsor of this weekend, and of course, massive sponsor as well of Aston Martin in 2022, their facilities just outside Jeddah actually got bombed, I think it was by a rebel group based in Yemen on Friday afternoon practice. Of course, this isn't a political podcast or anything like that. But of course, you know, we're interested in the Formula One at the end of the day. So there were immediately a lot of questions being raised about, you know, whether it would be safe enough to host a Grand Prix this weekend. You know, especially it got pretty eerie pretty quickly, didn't it? The fact you sort of just see cars doing their runs and down in towards the final corner. And just every time a car comes around, you just see like a bigger and bigger sort of black cloud.
The big smoke
in the distance. The big smoke from GTA 4.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not a good look for F1 or for Saudi Arabia, I don't think.
No.
Especially, well, I don't know how much of it was true, but on Twitter, the various little quotes from people were like, don't worry, this happens all the time, was kind of the attitude, which is like...
Yeah, very...
That's
I mean,
not not a promising sign, really.
And I think this is the other thing as well, isn't it? Obviously, like I said, we're not a political podcast, and to be honest, neither of us are particularly well-versed with the Middle East at all,
no,
really,
not
are we?
At all.
I don't think we'd ever try and claim that we were and then obviously go across and say something stupid. But yeah, obviously set a difficult tone at the start of the weekend. And of course, the most important thing for us at the end of the day was to know that everyone made it through the weekend, of course, safely, when all was said and done, you know, and there were no sort of other massive incidents in that regard around this weekend.
Yeah.
The only other real talking point, though, Jamie, from Friday running, was both Ferraris in FP2, sorry, having both slapping the wall and basically ruining their session and their evening, didn't they?
Yeah, both of them basically making pretty similar mistakes, different corners, but costing them valuable practice time, especially for those long runs, which arguably could have cost Leclerc a chance at the end, because I think that battle was down to Leclerc looking after his tyres worse than Verstappen did.
I think he overheated them, yeah.
Yeah, it would be interesting if he had done second practice. Maybe it could have all been different, but we'll never know.
No. But yeah, let's jump into qualifying then, Jamie. Of course, qualifying at Jeddah, arguably a pretty scary session, isn't it, I think
yeah.
I don't know, you watched F2 as well, didn't you, for the most part this weekend?
Yeah, I did.
That
places.
Qualifying session was carnage, wasn't it?
Yes.
Unfortunately. Now,
yeah.
We are both, I think we can safely say, you know, we both agree, you know, Formula 1, Formula 2 drivers, they need a bit of a challenge. But there's got to be a line drawn somewhere. And I think the debate still, isn't it, is whether the Jeddah street circuit is on that line, over the line, right up towards the line. You know, the track we've both been watching Formula 1 now for, what, the better part of 15 years. That makes us both sound really old.
Wow.
Doesn't it? But
yeah, very.
I just feel like around a track like this, there's just that... I just feel a bit uneasy more than basically anywhere else,
it's,
for the most part.
It's like when something goes wrong, you know it's going wrong, big style.
Yeah. There's nowhere to hide.
To credit where it's due, I absolutely love the track. Like, watching laps around here when they're nailed, like Perez's pole lap and stuff, so much, like, excitement. It's one of, like, obviously they need to make it a bit safer in some corners, goes without saying.
Yes, yeah.
But the track itself, they've done a really good job making it exciting to watch.
It's an exciting track, isn't it? But it's that horrible balance, isn't it, as well? Because, of course, at the end of the day, Formula One is still exciting because there is that inherent danger.
Yeah.
People
an element of,
often
like, stuff
don't,
can go wrong.
Yeah, people often don't like to talk about that, but it is a deep-rooted psychological thing as much as anything else for most people. You know, if there was absolutely no danger in Formula 1 at all, it probably wouldn't be as exciting. And that is... trying to find that balance, I think, is very, very difficult as well, of course. You know, we've had introductions like the Halo in recent years, you know, that we've praised pretty much since the beginning, haven't we?
Yeah.
Everything like that. But, yeah, when you get a lap hooked up at Jeddah, very, very satisfying, but I wouldn't argue it's any more exciting than, say, watching... For me, I always look back at Mugello a couple of years ago. Qualifying laps there were incredible, and, of course, when drivers did go off, with the exception of Lance Stroll, but that was a bit of a freak accident...
Yeah.
It was exciting, but didn't feel on edge.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they don't have the luxury of huge runoff areas at such a tight venue, but certainly they could do more to make it safer.
Yeah.
And we'll get onto that when we get to Q2. But first of all, Q1. Matt, what happened?
Well, Q1, Latifi. I mean, he had a woeful weekend on the whole. I mean, we'll talk about that a bit later on as well, but pretty early on, actually, in Q1, tips it into turn 13, and the car just breaks free really, really quickly. Like, surprisingly quickly.
Yeah, it was a strange crash, actually. Like, it looked like he just locked the rear brakes or something, wasn't it?
It was almost like, yeah, the rear diff just completely locked or something like that.
Mm.
Just seemed very, very bizarre for Latifi. Again, crashed actually into quite a weird area in the end, which I think a lot of people are going, well, you won't find F1 cars there, as a Marshall very quickly had to run back.
Yeah,
which I think obviously a lot of people forgot about. Obviously Latifi was alright though, which is the most important thing. And then Tsunoda seemed to have car issues that meant he couldn't qualify at all.
Yeah, so two cars didn't set a time in Q1, so that meant only the three slowest out of 18 were to go out.
Yes.
and Lewis Hamilton was able to find himself one of those three cars in a Mercedes-Benz.
Yes, in a very, very poor Mercedes-Benz, it must still be said. Yeah, on. I must admit, again, obviously, Hamilton, I wouldn't say wasn't himself this weekend, but I think, especially after Friday, there were definitely a few things on his mind about it. And I'm not trying to like make excuses for him, but you can often tell with Hamilton's driving style, you know, it was a combination of everything that happened Friday. You know, they had a very, very late night Friday night, which I think a lot of people forgot about. I think they were all still at the track at about 3 a.m.
Yeah, it was really late.
Combination of that and Mercedes with that car this weekend completely dropped the ball. He was losing a second down the straight to George Russell. So you think, oh, he must be making time up in the corners, and it just wasn't happening. He had no confidence in the car, which we haven't seen for years.
We saw his onboard on Sky, and he was like, in the first sector, he was just not near any of the apices, which you kind of have to be because that's where all your time is. So yeah, he just didn't look confident in the car at all. It was probably, it's definitely like messed up on the setup, but I still, it was a pretty poor weekend from Hamilton all round, really.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't a weekend to write home about. And his first Q1 outing, Jamie, on raw pace since Silverstone 2009.
Yeah.
Which is kind of insane when you think about
it. Yeah, that's mad.
So yeah, Hamilton went out in Q1. Then we get into Q2. Ocon gets blocked by Daniel Ricciardo in another very, very much sort of looking at the TV screen between your fingers, wasn't it? That one could have got nasty rather quickly. And again, this is the other problem, isn't it, with Jeddah? You know, we sort of talk about those walls being a bit too close to the track, but it also means visibility in a lot of areas is not great.
Yeah, they tried to open it up this year a little bit in the middle sector, but like, it's still, you can go around a super fast corner and there's just a car stopped and you didn't see it coming because you had about, like, every corner's basically blind with the barriers really close.
Especially so, looking back as well. Yeah. I'd argue even more than looking in front.
Yeah, so pretty close call for Ocon, but he had a few more of them throughout the weekend as well, so they all survived.
Yeah, Ricciardo actually did get a three-place grid penalty, though, for that one, which I think, I don't think you can really argue, certainly wasn't fair. But of course, very, very difficult for the drivers, of course, to judge where these other cars are, because they just can't see them. Obviously, they're completely reliant on their engineers, and sometimes that sense of urgency doesn't really get put through very well.
No, and you do feel for Ricciardo a bit because he can't do much else other than do what he's told by the engineer in terms of getting out of the way.
But
it's a very deserved penalty, I think.
Yes, exactly. You couldn't really argue against it because, of course, Ocon did nothing wrong and actually did a very, very good job to avoid Ricciardo in the end of that. Then, of course, we probably moved on to the biggest talking point of qualifying, wasn't it? Mick Schumacher, exiting out of Turn 10 in towards Turn 11, had an absolute monster shunt.
Yeah, massive. Like, probably right up there with some of the biggest Gs we've seen.
It was bigger than Grosjean's 2020 crash.
Yeah.
70G, I think I saw online.
Into a concrete wall as well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it was, yeah, obviously just a driver error, which is sucks for him. I think, well,
he shouldn't have put the car there, but it was very much, I would still argue it's not great track design.
No, it's not great track design at all. And also, what frustrates me is, like, in commentary on the F1 qualifying, they said the reason there's no tech pro barrier there is because why would a car crash there? But
when you've got a huge curve like on the outside,
literally the same thing happened in F2 in qualifying. Chen Bollock-Basti crashed there and was out the rest of the weekend. Both Alpines in qualifying at separate points lost it on that curb and very nearly crashed into that part of the barrier as well. Like, why is it concrete? Why is there no tech pro there? Or just lower the curb so it's not like an auto spin?
Or safer barrier.
Yeah, just get, like, a concrete wall is not a solution to that when you go into it at such an acute angle.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, Mick Schumacher, though, you know, he was transported to hospital, though, but again, was back on Sunday and unfortunately couldn't race because Haas didn't have enough spares, actually. But of course, I'm not sure he would have wanted to run that risk either. But yeah, I mean, when you sort of, again, this is the other weird thing, isn't it, with Jeddah? I mean, that, there was this element of, we need to have the most corners on a Formula One track.
Yeah.
And that is three corners there that could quite easily just be one far safer corner.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know what it is about, like, new tracks have to have something special. Like, who cares who's got the most corners?
Yeah.
No idea. But anyway, it is what it is. Schumacher was fine. he was obviously a bit shaken, took a while to get out of the car, and also his radio broke in the crash, so we heard nothing from him for about 10 minutes.
Which never helps, does it?
No. But, yeah.
Yeah, so then, of course, we move into Q3. Sergio Perez, Jamie, 215 Grand Prix. He finally puts it on pole, seemingly out of nowhere.
It was an incredible lap as well.
It was.
All throughout quali, it looked like Leclerc had a bit of an edge over everyone else. And it was like, suddenly, Perez just puts it together right at the end. And qualifying is not his strong suit at all. We've seen, obviously, he just had 215 races, zero poles.
He's never really had a car capable of pole, though, with the exception of last year.
Yeah. Yeah. But even so, he's never been on the front row, I don't think. Maybe was his first, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, incredible lap from Pacheco. Very well-deserved pole. Max was not on it at all, like the whole of quali, really. Only fourth place. And I think, what was it, 2 or 3 tenths off Perez? Which is his biggest deficit since, like, before Gasly as a teammate. So since 2018, that was his biggest deficit.
Ricciardo.
Yeah.
Yeah, because actually, when you look at the qualifying comparison so far this year, Perez has been ever so slightly stronger, marginally.
Yeah.
He's gained more there than he lost at Bahrain, which is kind of insane when you look at it. But yeah, so we had Red Bulls sandwiching the Ferraris then for the Grand Prix. Of course, top four are all exactly the same. George Russell ended up in fifth place there after a shaky qualifying. Didn't. Did he not?
Sixth in qualifying. Ocon
was it? Ocon, sorry, yeah, got fifth, didn't he? Yeah, Alpine. Really, really strong in qualifying, wasn't it?
They were.
So. Yeah, Alpine, I mean, this was always, I think, going to be a track that suited their engine anyway, because Alpine just always seemed to have a car that can... It seems to be fast right at the very end. It seems to be able to produce a bit more power right at the top of the road range. They were very good
last year as well.
Yes. So. Yeah, I just meant the power unit has always seemed to be like that. It seems right at the very top. It seems to hang on a bit better than anyone else. But yeah, that set us up, though, for what would hopefully be an exciting race... But not a scary one, wasn't it, Jamie? And for the most part, a couple of interesting moments, but for the most part, Sunday was pretty calm, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think across all the formula, they sort of calmed down a bit because the first F2 race on Saturday was like carnage.
It was disaster, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was absolute farce, really. And then the second F2 race on Sunday was much calmer, and so was the F1 race. They sort of chilled out. Once they remembered how to drive. So, yeah, it was much more like a normal race, but it was still very exciting to watch, I thought.
Yes, yeah. So, I mean, again, even before the race, though, Tsunoda, more issues, broke down trying to get to the start line. Mm. So he basically didn't turn a lap since free practice, did he? And that was it for the weekend.
Which is very unfortunate for him. But, yeah, I guess reliability is still a weakness of the Red Bull. I don't know if it's that Red Bull and AlphaTauri issue.
It was hydraulics, wasn't it?
Fair.
It was hydraulics, I feel.
I only turned my stream on the formation lap, so I didn't see any of that, but I just saw Tsunoda wasn't starting. It's like, okay. Obviously, he got the rubber the green in Bahrain by finishing out of the four Red Bull cars, and then all went wrong in Saudi. So unlucky for him, but he'll get plenty of chances throughout the season, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah, it'd be nice to see. Like, I think we've both sort of said this year, haven't we? We want to see Tsunoda... a lot closer to Gasly, and fingers crossed he's going to have a car that can actually show that as well there. But yeah, Checo on the pole, though. I genuinely thought he'd lose it going down in towards T1, but nice clean getaway. He's led away from Charles Leclerc there. Max Verstappen jumps Carlos Sainz off the start as well. I think we always knew Max was going to try and be aggressive in towards the first couple of corners. Early on, though, Jamie, in the race, of course, that one was pretty uneventful apart from that. Alpine were the team delivering the action early on in the race, weren't they?
Which was such... Like, I understand why they don't want to interfere, because it's obviously very early season. They look like they're obviously not going to be championship contenders, so they might as well let the drivers race. But when you have, like, Bottas and Magnussen and a whole train of midfield cars right behind, and you're at the head of the midfield, it just seemed like a bit of a risk not worth taking. But they put on a great show for us, so it was good.
Exactly. And I think there was an element of, well, we might as well give the sponsors a bit of airtime as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, Alonso and Ocon not willing to back down with each other. And it was,
I think Ocon was a bit over the line a couple of times, in my opinion. But
do you mean going back down in towards turn one?
Down to turn one, Alonso was looking for the inside and Ocon moved incredibly late on him.
I was always in the mindset looking at that, if we're thinking about the same, like the one they got closest.
Yeah, yeah.
There wasn't enough room on the inside there. Sort of my thing. Ocon moved slightly further over. Yeah, I completely agree. But Alonso was never going into a gap that was there.
No. No. But neither of them crashed. They both lived to fight on.
Yes.
But eventually Alonso did get past, and he was, I could tell he was a bit fuming by the way he was driving when he got past him.
That would be, I think, the main motivation if you work at Alpine to let one of them sort it out, is because Alonso just gets very tilted very quickly.
Yes, indeed. But what happened? Oh, that was all that really happened early race, wasn't it?
Well, those two fighting. Then you had that weird moment, didn't you, where the team told Ocon to not carry on battling, and then suddenly Bottas got past him as well, wasn't it?
He was like, stop battling, and he forgot which car he was.
Stop battling anyone at all.
Yeah. Yeah, so Ocon was running, what, eighth? That would have been eighth.
He was seventh, and then got relegated to eighth, wasn't it? When Bottas overtook him. Yeah, of course, the gap at the front, though, was actually Perez was controlling the field. Leclerc was keeping up with him, and then Verstappen and Sainz were both just dropping back ever so slightly early on, weren't they?
Until around 2 seconds roughly each.
It was just under two between the top two, and then just over two, I think, between Leclerc and Max. But Max just didn't quite seem to have the answer against them. Then we get to lap 15. Ferrari, I think, let's be honest, accidentally pulled out a bit of a worldly of a move, didn't they?
They got very lucky, didn't they? can't beat around a bush too much. They got lucky with this one. Yeah. Checo was incredibly unfortunate because obviously Ferrari tell Leclerc to pit. Red Bull want to cover it off, so they pit Perez first as he usually would. And then, the lap of Checo's outlap, Latifi crashes for the second unforced error in as many days.
And this one was by far and away the worst of the weekend.
Yeah, it was so bad from Latifi.
Low speed. That was genuine. I mean, because that's what... Did he retire in Bahrain as well?
I think he finished in Bahrain.
I want to believe that's either his second or his third crash unforced in as many races.
Well, it'll be his third unforced.
Yeah, Latifi, DNF.
The one in Abu Dhabi.
DNF.
How did he DNF in...
Oh, no, I'm looking at last year's race.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure he finished Bahrain. And then, obviously, he crashed in Abu Dhabi, which caused the controversy. So, yeah, three... pretty rookie errors, and he's been in F1 a while now. It must be his 45th race or something.
Yeah, third season he's into now. No, not quite that many. He's on about 40.
Oh yeah, the short one, 2020, wasn't it? But even so, he's been in F1 3 years. He's never really shown very much.
No,
he's got to be out the door at the end of this year, surely.
And I mean, we know
Albon is slapping him.
We know why Latifi was at Williams for so long. And I can kind of understand their logic if, you know, he's given us a lot over the last couple of years. We'll give him one more season to prove himself. Now we're not completely dependent on the money. Yeah. But he is just a pay driver, isn't he, at the end of the day? Yeah, and unlike Lance Stroll, who, let's be fair, neither of us are his biggest advocate, has now proved he is capable enough in a Formula One car.
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced Latifi might ever be there enough.
No. He's basically, like... this year's Sergei Sirotkin. It's like
Sergei Sirotkin wasn't that bad.
He got pretty trounced by Stroll, and Stroll was not great at that point in time.
He did well at Monaco though that year, didn't he?
Wow, one race. Mazepin outgot by Schumacher at Monaco last year.
It's because Schumacher kept crashing it.
Yeah,
as true. He did this weekend, but again.
Yeah, I don't see a long future for Latifi in the sport. To be honest, he must be about 26 now as well, so it's not like he's got much room to grow.
Yeah.
But yeah, unfortunate for Williams to have to repair the car twice in 2 days, but there we go. That caused a safety car, which massively screwed over Perez.
Yeah,
and
completely.
Everyone else. Yeah, he came out initially third, but then had to let Sainz back through because he overtook after the safety car line.
Yeah, which all got a bit weird, didn't it, as well?
Yeah, that was confusing. But there we go. Yeah, meant Leclerc led. Obviously, they all boxed because why wouldn't you on a safety car?
Free stop. Yeah,
and it screwed over the hard tyre runners as well.
Hamilton, K-Mag and Gasly got completely bent and over by it, didn't they? Oh, Hulk as well was in this race, was he? I never saw him.
Yeah, he was. He was running ninth for a bit, I believe. But no.
Wow!
Yeah, it didn't work out for those drivers, but Leclerc led from Verstappen and Sainz as the top three.
Yeah.
Which kind of set us up for the rest of the race.
Yeah, and I mean, the next 20 or so laps were pretty quiet as well, weren't they? Obviously, we had those few hard runners, that was still a bit out of position. But yeah, really then not a lot happened until all the way, lap 36, when seemingly with no rhyme or reason, Fernando Alonso with his Renault power unit, Daniel Ricciardo with his Mercedes power unit, and Valtteri Bottas with his Ferrari power unit all broke down on exactly the same lap.
Yeah.
With completely different issues.
Simultaneously, they just all stopped working, which was very strange. Caused another virtual at first.
Yes.
I believe, a safety car, because Alonso was going super slowly.
It was only ever
screwed
a virtual.
Screwed my fantasy team over as well.
Yep.
And Ricciardo stopped even worse and actually had to stop his car on track. Alonso made it back to the pits. Bottas, they pit first and then couldn't fix it, so he came back in the next lap and retired.
Yeah.
Not great for any of those. Quite unlucky for Alonso and Bottas especially, because they look like to be on good, for good points.
Yes.
That's the way it goes. So.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously the other driver that got completely screwed up by it was Lewis Hamilton, wasn't it?
It was strange, that one, because I think Magnussen and Hülkenberg both made it into the pits before it closed.
But Hamilton was in front of the pit lane.
Hamilton
and then couldn't pit because...
Too tight, really. Ricciardo's car was stopped.
Yeah.
He had such a short amount of time to make up his mind. He was probably having some thoughts back to
Monza.
Monza,
yeah, exactly.
And was like, yeah, it's not worth the risk. But to be fair, he didn't arguably lose out from that. He just didn't gain.
And no, he lost out from it. He was about 10 seconds ahead of K-Mag.
Yeah, but
and...
he didn't...
Had he been able to pit then, he would have still probably come out behind Russell.
Yeah, probably. But it's not like he... I don't know how I'm going to phrase this. He didn't get lucky. Like, the virtual safety car would have... It was lucky for Magnussen. Hamilton didn't get unlucky. He just didn't benefit from the luck.
I would argue he was unlucky because everyone else had the choice of a pit stop and he didn't.
Yeah. Although it wasn't actually closed when he went past. He just was in caught in two minds. But we'll not get into that.
Okay. Then, of course, I mean, this has been a pet hate for us as well, hasn't it, over the last couple of years. Why don't commentators understand how a virtual safety car works?
It's stupid.
It's so infuriating.
Too fair to Martin Brundle, he does. But he wasn't there this weekend.
No.
I remember there was one time that Martin explained it perfectly to Crofty.
Yeah.
And they've just forgotten about that.
Like, bless them. Crofty and JB, a very good commentary duo.
Yeah, Button did great this weekend,
I thought. Please understand how a virtual safety car works, because it's so frustrating.
Can I do a bit of year 9 physics to explain to the viewers?
Please do, genuinely.
So you've got Leclerc and Verstappen with a 1.8 second gap or so.
1.6 seconds, I think it was, when the VSC came out.
When the VSC was deployed. That 1.6 seconds equates to, I don't know, say 500 metres.
It's way less than that.
It's way less than that, yeah. So say it's about 300 metres or so. It doesn't really matter. There's 300 metres between them. They all slow down to 40% slower than they were going. The distance between them is still the same. It's still about 300 metres or so. That means because you're going slower, speed equals distance over time, the time between them goes up to about 4 seconds. It doesn't mean Leclerc has gained 3 seconds on Max.
No.
it's basic physics. It's not hard. But yeah, it's a little pet hate. Obviously, they all work out they were wrong once the virtual safety car ends and the gap goes back to exactly what it was before.
Well, it
much.
Didn't this time, did it? Verstappen gained 7/10.
Yeah, I get the feeling that was because he got lucky with where the safety car ended.
Yes, exactly. This is the fundamental issue with VSCs, isn't it? They're very much like putting a plaster over an artery wound, aren't they? They solve a problem, but not particularly brilliantly, to be honest. They're still a bit flawed. But then again, a safety car is in exactly the same way.
Yeah. Because safety car screws the race even more. VSCs are more normal for race situations because it doesn't affect it too badly.
Yeah. I mean, the only way you could sort out a VSC, isn't it, is everyone has to have a completely fixed speed around the entirety of a lap. And then this VSC comes in when a certain car is exactly the same point on the track as they were when it came out.
Which just wouldn't be possible.
No.
That's just so much technicalities.
Yeah. But it's still a little bit frustrating, isn't it, when you could argue this race was completely defined by a VSC, which is completely there to do the opposite and not define races in the way it defined it.
But then that's happened before. Like, people get free stops.
Yeah, exactly.
Australia 2018 springs to mind.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So lap 42 then, Jamie. Things start getting spicy, don't they? Now, we already saw the first battle of 2022 between Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen. It looks like Jeddah was about to be round two of that, didn't it?
Yeah, and it looked, for a few laps at least, like Leclerc had the measure of Max again.
Yeah.
As he did in Bahrain. But, yeah, it was... We're going to get onto this in a second, but the setup of the track, I'm not a huge fan of. With the... You've got one DRS line down to turn 27, another detection point, and then another DRS line back into turn one of the next lap. Basically, it means that a car can pass into 27 and then get repassed quite easily if the overtaken car stays close.
Yeah.
So we saw that on lap 42.
Yes.
Verstappen went past because Leclerc lifted off a bit early to get the DRS. Leclerc then goes straight back past him into turn one. These things, we've seen this in F1 before. I remember Canada 2013, Alonso and Hamilton were braking in a straight line to try and get DRS on each other back then. So it's happened. I think the lap later, they took it to an absolute extreme.
Yeah, I was getting a bit worried we were seeing 2021 vibes.
Yeah, it wasn't the best look, I don't think. People loved it on Twitter, obviously, but I don't know.
It's not racing, is it? This is the problem for us purists.
Like, braking in a straight line before a braking zone to try and get DRS, it just doesn't feel right to me.
No.
But, yeah, Max almost half-spun himself out as well, trying to get going from that. But they both locked up. Verstappen worse. I thought it was going to screw his tyres, but luckily not. Leclerc stayed ahead for the next couple of laps until Verstappen called the car, I think, and got close enough again.
Yes, yeah, because I was going to talk about those DRS zones. I'm trying to remember. I think it's Mexico, isn't it? The DRS zone, the detection is like just before the final corner, but you get the DRS down the front straight and down the second straight. That's how I think this one needs to work. Because then it means
that
cars...
either that or just get rid of one of them.
I think both of them have every right to be there. But it just then means, you know, you actually get someone can send it down in towards the final corner because that's the longer zone. It's where you're more likely to get a chance.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also means you can defend yourself a bit down in towards turn one. Otherwise, we end up in these situations. Because obviously, you've never seen anything like that at Mexico.
Yeah.
Because the DRS zone works differently.
And it used to be like Canada as well, with the you got close into the final chicane and then have the DRS again down towards turn one.
Yes, yeah.
But... I don't like the two detection zones so close to each other.
Yeah, I think that's potentially the other issue, isn't it? I mean, again, I've always been an advocate for DRS.
I think it's good.
I'm like, always sort of... I hate the way people go, oh, DRS overtakes are so boring. And they're like, yeah, I'd rather have that, though, than no overtakes at all.
Yeah. At least you watch 2010?
Exactly. At least that opens up some sort of racing. But... yeah, whether that just means that, you know, if we've got back-to-back DRS zones, they need to have one detection point, or like you said, just no back-to-back DRS zones like that. Something probably needs to be looked into, doesn't it, with them? Because we're just going to see it more and more often soon.
Yeah, and yes, it's a new kind of racing, but...
that's not racing.
No,
the novelty wore off for everyone. At the wrong time, yeah.
It wore off for me after watching F2, and it was happening there as well.
Yes, yeah.
So... yeah.
Exactly. And I think this is the thing, isn't it? Of course, we look back at that Hamilton-Alonso one, and it was quite cool, you know, sort of seeing these two drivers, you know, on the top of their game trying to play the strategy. But it just very quickly becomes very frustrating, doesn't it? And I think it...
and dangerous.
And dangerous, of course. Stop. Yeah. Because I think the reason why that Canada one worked quite well in comparison to these two, of course, is that's in an acceleration zone. These two are in braking zones.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it definitely needs a rework. But... I don't see it getting a rework because it gets people talking.
Because
that's what they want,
action,
really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Formula One, we feel more and more, isn't it, is pushing towards that entertainment over sport sometimes.
Oh, I've got a rant about that later as well, but I'll wait for that.
We'll wait for that in just a minute then. But yeah, lap 46 though, on to lap 47. Max Verstappen finally gets the jump on Charles Leclerc after a couple more eggy DRS antics. Leclerc almost binned it, trying to defend from him, but did well to hold on to that one.
Pretty good move from Max as well. Yeah, it was like he didn't go for it into the last corner, instead just stuck his nose up the inside and luckily got some space, and then obviously had a much better exit and straight line past him into turn one, drove off into the distance, although not really into the distance.
Not into the distance.
Because there are only about three laps left anyway.
Exactly. And you think, you know, those final three laps were setting ourselves up for Leclerc versus Verstappen. You know, maybe we could see, you know, a last lap move, something like that. But actually what we saw was Alex Albon and Lance Stroll have the most league racing fight I've ever seen. Stupid. It was a peak lack of awareness and lack of...
Have you seen the Albon onboard, out of curiosity?
I don't think so.
It was absolutely Albon's fault. I mean, on first viewing, it looked like Stroll's fault.
Well, Albon did get the penalty for it.
Albon did get a three-place penalty for it from Melbourne. But yeah, they're fighting over 11th.
Yeah, we can't really argue as well. Stroll is not a very observant Formula One driver.
No.
Even on his best days. So he was probably quite lucky that he didn't get anything from that one. But yeah, Albon was going for a proper Danny Ricks end, wasn't he?
Yes, into turn one. And they came to blows. Albon's tyre got ripped off on the front right, and Stroll finished, but a lap down and with damage.
Yes.
And here comes my second rant. Because people, obviously, we've well documented.
I don't actually know where this is going. So
no,
I'm
I've
really
not told
intrigued.
Matt about this. So we're going to throw it back to Abu Dhabi. We get a safety car deployed and
did we? I thought Abu Dhabi got cancelled. Oh, good. You're calling
maybe in your mind. But no, we get a safety car thrown and sort of manipulated to give us a show, give us a finale. This race, we have Albon stopped on the side of the track.
Yes.
And we've got Leclerc and Max heading for a final lap battle. And they do not throw a virtual safety car out. When there's a car, and they did this in Bahrain as well. Perez was stopped at turn one for a whole lap. And there's still the lap cars are going to go past it. Super dangerous situation.
That was the last lap of the GP, though.
But there were still the lap cars, like Ricciardo and Stroll, to come through that zone. And there was a car stationary in the middle of the track. That would absolutely, at any other time in the race, be a virtual safety car. The reason they didn't...
I don't think in Bahrain it would have been just because... If it had been any other time during the race, yes. But that's normally because it was the last lap... They didn't need to get marshals onto the circuit to move.
Yeah, they can just leave it, I guess.
Yeah.
But even so, this one in Saudi, definitely.
This one wasn't.
They didn't throw a virtual safety car because they wanted the finale of Leclerc and Verstappen.
Yeah.
And it would have been a bit of anticlimax. Nothing has changed, and people scapegoat Massey. It's a problem bigger than Michael Massey. They love just giving us or hoping for the finale. Like, that's a problem of safety, because there should have been a safety car, or a virtual safety car, for Albon's car, because it was stationary at the start of the track. And the fact there wasn't just shows there's deep-rooted problems, but...
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? We've seen more red flags than ever before in the sport, in certain instances, when, in the past, there wouldn't have been, it would have been 10 lap fine safety car.
You've got... I remember Monza 2020, which was the first of the new trend of red flags. That was... 9 years since the previous red flag for a crash, which was Monaco 2011.
Yes, yeah.
And
Monaco
since then
2011?
Had...
Do you mean 2013?
Yeah. No, Petrov went into rule.
What about 2013 when the barrier came across the track?
Car. They just got rid of the barrier really quick.
That can't have been a safety car.
It was.
That was not a safety car.
That I'll do some research.
Can't have been, because the barrier was completely across the circuit. I don't believe that wasn't a red flag.
Oh, it was red flag.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But even so, 7 years between two red flags for crashes. And then since Monza 2020, we've had like...
Was Japan 2014 was also, though, wasn't it?
Yes, but that was...
That was weather as well.
That was weather, and also, regardless of the situation, that was always getting red flagged.
Yes, yeah.
For medical reasons. So, yeah, it's a bit of a trend, isn't it? They love a bit of drama. They love, especially since they brought in the new rule, since red flags create a new race start for us as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
it's that horrible thing, isn't it? Because on the one hand, we can understand why they do it. Because, of course, you know, we do want battles at the end of a Formula One Grand Prix. You know, we are looking for that last lap battle. But I guess we've obviously come from a generation, you know, where races would finish under safety car and things like that.
Yeah, Brazil 2012, that was like the
that
best championship
ever. That would be completely
ever.
Different, wouldn't it, now?
Yeah.
God, Alonso would have won a third world title.
He probably would have done, because they'd done everything they can to make it restart.
Actually, would he? No, because Seb was already in sick, wouldn't he?
Yeah,
so unless Seb bottled it, yeah.
But or they would have just, like, I don't know.
Seb could have been hit again. It certainly would have made it more dramatic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but they just ended the whole season under safety car because there was a car that crashed and they couldn't do anything about it. So that's just how it went. And the whole season came down to a safety car finish. But this happens sometimes. But F1 loves the spotlight and loves the drama now. So
yeah,
there we go.
Yeah, it's a fine balance, isn't it, I think, at the end of the day. Because, let's be fair, had Jeddah been red flagged with two laps to go, that would have been really annoying. Because it wouldn't have needed to be. But definitely something needed to be done in that situation. Especially, like we said, after the Mick Schumacher crash, cars end up anywhere on a Formula One circuit. You've got a plan for them to arrive anywhere at any speed at any angle.
Yeah, and wherever Albon did park, there's no guarantee, like, another car doesn't spin off there.
No,
and
exactly.
Hits Albon's car.
It's like the exit of turn 6, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah.
In the end, or it might have been turn 10.
Yeah. So nothing actually happened badly, but it could have done easily. And it's
exactly.
Just a situation they could have avoided.
Yeah, there's only so many times things don't happen. But I mean, we used to say the same thing about putting tractors on Formula One tracks, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly.
Until it ended badly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was an interesting GP weekend, wasn't it, Jamie? I think more questions have been raised about the Jeddah Cornish circuit. Although apparently there are rumours we might not be racing there much longer anyway. Apparently there's going to be a new sort of purpose-built venue sorted very, very soon in Saudi.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've not seen anything about that.
No,
but
no.
Hopefully, I do quite like the
I got
track,
linked
so.
One article by one of the guys that sends me a lot of information from Jeddah, who was at the race weekend again. Just talking about, obviously, it was a Saudi article talking about it, so obviously I can only use Twitter's translate, which isn't perfect, but sort of talking about there is meant to be a new Saudi Arabian circuit in the works. But there we go then. Max Verstappen took home the dub from Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz. There are another Ferrari double podium. You know, when are we going to...
I've got a stat for this as well.
Oh, here we go.
Their first double...
Double podium.
Double podium since... Austria and Britain in
2004?
2018.
Oh, okay.
2004. Not that long ago. But yeah, long time since that. And F1 actually did a stat pad thing and got it wrong. They said it was Singapore 2019, but of course Vettel spun and crashed at Monza the week before. So that didn't happen.
2019? Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did, didn't
2019.
He? Yeah, I forgot about that. Seb used to spin
double,
that
double
thing
podium.
A lot.
He did. But we'll leave it. We'll lay off on Seb since he wasn't even here.
He wasn't
weekend.
Even here this weekend. Yeah.
But yeah, good stuff for Ferrari once again. They absolutely battered the championship. Now they're like 40 points clear in the constructors.
Well, constructors, they've lost points at the top, haven't they? Or to Red Bull anyway.
Well, yeah, but Red Bull are still third. Mercedes are second at the minute.
Mercedes, yeah, somehow second. So yeah, Ferrari have got more than points than Red Bull and Mercedes combined.
Yeah. Yeah. Who was Perez fourth? Of course.
Yep. Fourth for Perez, then Russell, Kevin Magnussen, Valtteri Bottas. No, I'm looking at the wrong race.
I'm looking at
Bahrain, sorry.
Oh, great.
Russell, in fifth there, had a pretty quiet day in the end. I mean, yeah, Mercedes were just in no man's land with that car that was set up properly. Ocon in sixth, though. A good day out for Alpine. Like we said, this should have been a track that suited their car based on past history. Almost, though, lost to Lando Norris as McLaren seemed to have a bit more about themselves this weekend, didn't they?
Yeah, they were slightly better. Norris had a bit of a quiet race. He kind of benefited from timing of safety car. That's how he got ahead of Gasly. And then obviously the dropouts helped him as well. So it maybe wouldn't have been as good as seventh, but he probably could have scraped a point in a normal race. But
yeah,
good stuff.
I guess it was one of those things as well, wasn't it? Is McLaren had a car that was capable, you know, that he could stay ahead of Gasly as well, wasn't it, at the end of the day? Gasly in eighth, though. K-Mag in ninth, another couple of points for Haas. And then Hamilton down in 10th. Now, I don't know, Jamie, does that actually award you points in Formula 1?
That was funny. If anyone's not seen, Hamilton on the radio at the end of the race asked if 10th place gets him any points, which, yeah, shows how long it's been since he finished there.
Yes.
Which was career 2012.
How did I know 10th? You just know that?
I looked it up this
morning. That's such an obscure stat. Then, of course, Jamie's two favourite drivers didn't score points in 11th and 12th.
Right. I'm not having this. Guanyu Zhou got absolutely screwed.
By what?
Well, the car doesn't start properly.
He kept putting it in anti-stall.
So yeah, it went anti-stall again. So
it's because
he
hit Ricciardo.
it kind of was, to be fair. But still, he was running in last at the end of that one, once again.
Yeah.
Did a really good comeback by overtaking Albon off the track, but we'll ignore that.
Yeah, he did do that. That's about
and
the only thing
he had a 5-second penalty. 5-second penalty for overtaking Albon off track, which was worth taking because he gained like 10 seconds on Albon really quickly. But then the team forgot how to serve a 5-second penalty.
But it's because they had issues, wasn't it, with the jack beforehand?
Yeah, no, the problem was there weren't any issues. It's just the jack man isn't allowed to lift the car up because you can't do anything to the car. And the first jack man lifted the car up too soon.
But
so
it, it wasn't even the right jack, was it?
No, and then they swapped over for some reason. But anyway, because they did that work on the car technically during the 5-second, he then had got a drive-through penalty as well for not serving the 5-second penalty properly. So I don't know why they couldn't just give him another 5-second penalty, but there we go.
Because he didn't serve penalties correctly.
Yeah, exactly. So without the drive-through, he finishes like 7th, 8th. But there we go. He had good pace again. We rep.
Okay. Apparently we rep.
Yeah, well, I do at least.
And I mean, yeah, apart from that, though, 8 cars either didn't make the start or didn't make the finish, if you include Lance Stroll. Albon, Bottas, Alonso, Ricciardo, Latifi, Tsunoda, and Mick Schumacher all not making it to the end.
Yeah.
Kind of wild.
That's equaled the most retirements from a race in 2021 already.
Was that
we
also
said at the
Jeddah?
Start of the season. No, that was Hungary. We said at the start of the year, like, reliability could be an issue. Didn't quite expect it to be randomly striking, like, a lot of cars.
Well, it was every power unit, wasn't it? Whether,
yeah,
of course, it was
Tsunoda,
the power
course,
unit.
Well.
Yeah.
But every well, at least one car for every power unit had a mechanical failure. So it's clearly something the teams need to get on top of still.
Yeah.
And I don't think they will order for Australia. I think the rumours are, well, obviously, the European season starts in Imola, where you will also be there.
Thank you.
And, yeah, get that one in. So, yeah, I don't know how what will actually change much here between here and Melbourne.
Well, I must admit, yeah, on a different podcast that I did with someone else, yes, I sold myself out.
What
Jeremy.
Is this? Unbelievable.
I predicted Australia to have the most DNFs of any race this year.
It's going to have to do quite well to beat that one.
It is. And now, sort of looking back, I'm thinking, especially with the track changes, it doesn't seem that likely. But you never know. We'll wait and see about that one. Let's have a look then, Jamie, at our F1 fantasy teams.
Oh, yes. Are you going to do some editing again or not?
I'm going to do some editing again, yeah. Did you make any changes to your team after last weekend?
I did throughout the week to make money, but I ended up going back to the same team.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, I swapped Alonso to Bottas earlier in the week and then swapped Bottas back to Alonso.
Fair enough. I made a lot of changes to mine. I took out Lando Norris and McLaren, thankfully.
Good move. Although Norris did quite well this weekend, so maybe not.
Yep. Unfortunately, I had to place Lando with Nicholas Latifi because I ran out of money, which wasn't so great. But I did also squeeze Ferrari in there, which I was pretty happy with.
Yeah, they seem like the best team. If you don't have Ferrari, get on Ferrari.
Ferrari are definitely the best bang for the buck team, isn't it?
Yeah.
At the moment. So after the second race weekend of the year then, Jamie, well, how many points did you score in Saudi Arabia?
I scored 211 from Saudi.
Damn.
Which I think is pretty good for me.
So, what's that? You're now 2-0 up.
I'm on 440 overall as well.
Considerably
more than you.
It is. I scored 198 in Jeddah, which was a lot closer to you, in all fairness.
Yeah.
I feel like my team's terrible. Got potential if Latifi pulls his finger out and actually does something worthwhile in this sport.
You just said your team relies on Latifi, which is not...
No, it doesn't rely on him. I mean, I've got Russell, Leclerc, Perez and K-Mag, which can easily all be sort of top 7, top 8.
Yeah.
It's just Nicholas Latifi is basically a toaster.
I'm liking myself at the minute. We've got Verstappen and Leclerc are my big guns, and Ferrari as a team. And then my other three are Zhou, Magnussen and Alonso.
Yeah,
and
you've kind of finessed that, haven't you?
I was so close. I was between Alonso and Ocon like all week. And if I'd gone for Ocon, I'd genuinely done so well because Ocon got about 30 more points this race than Alonso did. But there we go. These things happen sometimes.
Yeah. So I mean, you did pretty well there. In terms, though, of the league then, Jamie, let's head over to the Matt 212 league.
Oh, God, how do I find this?
4,267 of you now. That is just I mean, mind-blowing numbers anyway. The fact we've got over 4,000 of you in is just insanity. Overall, then, we've actually got one person clear out in front, Jamie, on 561 points. That is Ray T from America. He scored 313 in Saudi Arabia. We'll have a look at the...
And had Bottas. Wow, unlucky.
Yeah, well, we'll have a look, actually, at Jeddah results in just a moment. What is, Jamie, can you tell me, the top score of anyone in the world right now?
Ooh, you're testing me a bit here using this website. The top score in the whole world is 599.
So we're not far away then. Ray T is only a handful of points away there in on 561. That's pretty good go. What's that best team then, Jamie, out of interest?
Oh, no, I've gone off it now. Hang
on. Oh, come on, Jamie.
Right, the best team is Islam E, who's Egyptian. And in Saudi, he had Magnussen, Joe. This is actually my team, but Ocon instead of Alonso. I'm fuming.
But he mega driver.
He megged Verstappen and Turbo Leclerc. So it's literally my
team. He's actually got your team, hasn't he? That's insane. Because I'm looking at the guy that scored the most in ours, and he's just got Bottas instead of Guan Yu Zhou.
So I've done really well, apart from one detail. That's kind of annoying.
You did pretty much, yeah. If you'd mega drivered Verstappen as well there, you did. Yeah, I mean,
never mind.
Sensibly, based on your predictions last week, you would have done if you were going to mega driver anyone. Yeah, you would have. Jeddah. You would have got the best possible score in F1 Fantasy, Jamie.
If I don't know if I'd gone on Ocon or Alonso.
Yes.
But
yeah.
I didn't.
So. No, exactly.
But
exactly.
I'm still. Where are you in the league?
I'm probably at about minus 8,000.
So in your league, I am 451st.
I am 1,470th.
So I'm top 10%. That's decent. I'll take that.
What position are you, sorry?
451. So
no,
just
you're not.
Off. Yeah. Top 11%.
Top 11, yeah. Top 11. I'm inside about the top 40%, which isn't so great.
No,
no, I'm just, yeah, near enough top 30%, aren't I? Top third.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
Got a long time to tinker before Melbourne.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, having a look, though, at results from Saudi, then. If we just go Saudi... how do I do this? I don't think I can. I don't think it'll
let
me. I can
tell you.
How can
Patricia
I find...
L.
How do I find this out, sorry?
You just go on the league and then at the top...
Oh, yes, season, sorry, there. Saudi. Yes, here we go. So yeah, Patricia L, Red Rari.
Had my team, but Ocon instead of Alonso.
That is quite funny.
Oh, I'm so close to being great.
So close to being great. Poor Jimmy. His team's worth 102.2 million as well, though. That's quite good going.
That's good stuff. Yeah.
Early on. I mean, he had a nightmare, though, in the first race of the year, by the looks of it. Oh, he did! He got 126, Patricia!
Oh, dear.
Oh, I'm so sorry to you, because, yeah, they went down the McLaren-Lando route as well, like
Not
I
great.
Did. That's a bit heartbreaking. Yeah, so there top 10, though, from Saudi Arabia, though, Jamie, was Patricia. Then we had Diogo with 324 points. Then we had Ray, who's now currently top of the league on 313. They're tied with Adarsh A and Pete M, as well as... Oh, I'm not going to be able to pronounce this name,
There's
Jamie.
Loads of people.
Pronounce the SCP team for me, because apparently I always
Guilherme?
Say
this.
Guilherme.
Something like that.
Rather than Guilherme.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Guilherme. You're
I don't know.
F2.
Yeah. Guilherme Samaya is always the way I've said it, and I genuinely thought that was right. I'm sorry.
No.
So, Guilherme.
Yes.
Okay. Ricardo B, Clementine, and Andrea. Round out our top 10 there, all tied in third place in the end, which is kind of insane. Then we've got another huge... Oh, no, we haven't got so many tied. We've got AD Christopher and Losu, who are tied in 10th place there as well at the end of Saudi Arabia. So congratulations to all of you guys that have made it to the top 10. That means, Jamie, give us a rundown of our top 10 overall at this stage of the year. I think it's a lot of the same names,
overall,
isn't it?
Overall, similar... We've got Ray T, who was in the top 10 then. Top, clear, on 561. We've got Jasper K, the Undertaker from Bangladesh, in in joint second as well as, I can't read that, Eline H, Spanish?
Eline, yeah.
Eline, something
I
like that.
I don't know.
And Lele Tu, who was top in Bahrain, I remember.
Yeah.
So that's our top five.
All separated by 1 point.
Yeah, 1 point between the top five. That's pretty good going. Joe R, Ethan T, Will M, and Krista's S, as well as Ricardo B, finish out the top 10 quite close as well. But I need to get in there. If I had Ocon this week, I wouldn't be far away.
You wouldn't, would you? That's really worrying, and I just need to actually build a decent team.
You need
team.
To pick up your game.
Yeah. I do desperately at some point this year. But, I mean, we'll wait and see about that one. Maybe I'll have to make more big changes before the next race of the campaign then, Jamie. However, we might not be too close in fantasy, though, Jamie, but still overall, with our little head-to-head predictions, it's pretty close still, isn't it? I've got the predictions just here. He says that, as now I realise I don't have the predictions just here. Give me 1 second.
I believe I remember them.
I believe I have found them.
Nice.
So
we both put Verstappen on pole.
Which we both got the wrong Red Bull.
Yes.
My top three for the Grand Prix was looking pretty damn good. Even after qualifying, wasn't it? My top three seemed far more likely than your top three. But because of the way we score these, you kind of, ended up doing better than me this week.
Repeat that for me one more time.
You got lucky this week.
Yes, but there we go. I believe I got the top two bang on with Verstappen and Leclerc.
You did? I got them the wrong way around. I said Leclerc to beat Verstappen.
I put Hamilton third. I had way too much faith in him.
Which wasn't your wisest choice. I had Perez P3, who, I mean, got unlucky because he finished P4. And to be fair, at that safety car, they were actually running the top three in my order. Obviously, Perez had illegally jumped Sainz, but still, defeats the object.
Yeah.
So that means, overall, Jamie, what are the scores on the doors?
Yeah, so I got 4 points for my two bang on, and you got 2 points this weekend for having two of them on the podium, but in the wrong order.
Yep.
So overall, I believe it is 7 to me and 6 to you.
It is.
Very close. A lot to play for.
Exactly. And this is the good thing with this point system. It does mean, you know, there is a lot of chances this year for one of us to try and claw it back against the other if we have
a
couple
of disaster. Well, you nail it. You get 8 points.
Exactly.
Right.
Everything spot on, that's 8 points, which is more than either of us have scored in two weekends combined.
Yeah.
Driver of the day then, Jamie.
Interesting. There weren't that many shout outs, I don't think. Like, other than obviously the top two put on a good show for us. I would go with Verstappen if I was choosing one.
I can't really argue against that this week. And there was no one else that really stood out further down the order. I think had Hamilton been able to pit and would have came out like P6, I would have actually tried to argue for him a bit more as a good recovery. But yeah, Verstappen.
Yeah, decent recovery.
Verstappen this weekend, I think, deserves driver of the day. You know, after the Red Bull woes last time, Andy desperately needed a good result here. Probably needed a win. And, you know, him and Red Bull delivered at the end of the day. Checo could have probably bagged driver of the day had it not been for the safety car.
Had he won, definitely.
Fell away a little bit in the second half, didn't he? Unfortunately.
Yeah, we'll not be doing Melbourne predictions this week.
No, we will not.
Because we've got a week off, so next week, stay tuned.
Next week we will be back, though, with our Melbourne predictions. Race rating, though, Jamie, out of 10, what are we giving Saudi Arabia?
I think it's very good. I think I gave Bahrain 8.
You gave Bahrain a 7.
A 7.
If I remember correctly.
That's harsh. I would give Jeddah also a 7.
I gave Bahrain a 7.5. I'm going to give Jeddah a 7.5 as well.
It was basically the same race over again, wasn't
it? They were pretty similar, weren't they? Yeah, pretty quiet at the start. A little bit of action early on, about 1/3 distance. Then nothing happens until about 2/3 distance. And then a little bit of stuff happens at the end.
Yeah. But it was a good race. I enjoyed it. Verstappen's obviously my guy, so...
Yes, yeah, exactly.
One of my four guys, but we'll ignore that.
Yes. So, yeah, like we said, we've actually got a break week now, though. Albert Park, Australia, in a couple of weeks' time. Very, very excited to see how the track changes are going to affect that weekend. But, of course, we will be back next week to discuss that a whole lot more with you guys as well there. But anything else to add, Jamie, before we round this one out?
I don't believe so. I think that's about everything.
No, I just want to say as well quickly, because this is the first video I can say it, a massive thank you as well to all of you guys. We've hit 40,000 subscribers, which is kind of just mind-blowing to me, to be honest. Funnily enough, someone said a couple of weeks ago when we'd started picking up a little bit of momentum again, you know, maybe by the end of April I could hit 40k. I think I was on about 38,000 then. And somehow inside, 2 weeks, we've gained near enough another...
Done it by end of March.
By the end of March even, before April. And I thought, there's no way we're going to be able to do that. And here we are. 50k next goal on the YouTube, wow. Which is kind
halfway
of
to a plaque.
Halfway to a YouTube subscriber plaque, which would be pretty damn cool. Of course, though, if you're not already, please do make sure you go follow the podcast over on Spotify as well, you know, if that's how you'd rather listen and enjoy your podcast. But Jamie, as always, though, a massive thank you for speaking to you today. It's always been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Same time next week.
Same time next week. We'll be back, hopefully, once more. Previewing the Australian Grand Prix. But yeah, thank you all so much for listening/watching. And we'll be back very, very soon for more Knowing Wheel.